Part 2. Forgotten Truths.
I have heard it said that the 12th is beyond trust. This is ridiculous, of course. A false claim made by those who mistake trust for control. Within the bounds of their own misperception, they are correct. We cannot be collared, not before Angron, and certainly not after. To truly trust a thing is to understand its nature. Doing so is simple enough, just as one can trust fire to burn. In this regard, our Legion is the foremost of all in trustworthiness, because across the length and breadth of this galaxy, no matter where you might find him, you can trust that a world-eater is doing but one of two things. He is either making war, or he is readying himself to do so.
Garland Serlac, Apothecary of the 12th Legion. Chapter 10. Tethys watches through the eyes of the boy who finds himself standing in a pit alongside 100 other people. They are clothed in sackcloth rags, many with iron manacles still circling their ankles and wrists. Slavers' brands mark their flesh, puckered and raw from their recent touch. Some shift and dart their eyes back and forth, whispering in low, frightened voices, but most crane their necks upwards at the immense metal ziggurat they are crowded around. The boy sees every nick and pit in the worn iron steps. Noise batters over them from a roaring crowd, surrounding the slaves from a tiered amphitheatre that rises from behind high stone walls. The air above the pit is filled with strange metal spheres, about the size of a man's ribcage. They buzz and click and chatter at each other in the same tongue the men who captured the boy had used. But where theirs had been deep and gruff, the voices coming from the flying drones are thin, preening, and argumentative. Horns blare from around the edge of the pit, and the crowd erupts in cheers. Large circular vents built into the sides of the walls twist open, and a torrent of brackish liquid sluices down onto the ground. The tang of the fluid fills the boy's nose, and he sees the fumes curl from it as it rushes across the floor of the pit. A woman screams as she is the first to come into contact with it. She jumps back as the flesh of her foot sizzles. People begin scrambling up onto the first step of the ziggurat as the entire floor is covered. The pyramid is now an island, slowly shrinking as the volume of caustic water issuing from the vents increases and the bottom steps disappear beneath the rising pool. At first, the slaves help each other, holding out their hands to haul their fellows higher up the ziggurat as the water rises over the steps one by one. They scream up at the throng, cheering over their suffering, and most fiercely at the buzzing spheres that flit around them, intently watching their faces with braces of whirring lenses. The boy begins to understand the meaning of his fellow captive's words, though he has no inkling how. They call the talking silver orbs maggot's eyes. The flow does not cease, even after the vents themselves are submerged, still pumping more of the toxic floor into the pit. The ziggurat shrinks, and the space available to stand upon is quickly overtaken by the number of people struggling to remain on it. Packed together, tighter, and desperate, it's easy to lose one's balance on the slick metal. The first of them falls into the water. The corrosive acid mixed into it is potent enough to dissolve flesh and bone into slurry, but not immediately. The man's screams are a sound unlike any the boy has ever heard, an agony so intense that it causes him physical pain. The noise of the crowd is a near tangible thing, as they exult in watching the man slowly boil away to nothing. The other slaves grow quiet now. For the first time, they begin to look at one another, not as human beings, kindred victims of this sadistic savagery, but as obstacles to reaching the safety of the increasingly smaller steps above. They have become opponents, enemies, standing in the way of living just a little longer. A new smell prickles at the boy's nose as the acidic water laps at the edge of the stair he stands on. panic. 5 steps from the top, the captives begin to kill each other. The screams spike louder as they jostle, shove, and wrestle each other into the water. Some try to scramble up the steps alone, only to be seized by those beneath them and hurled to their deaths. Humanity abandons them, replaced by the frothing animal instinct to survive, all set to the ovations of the crowd. The boy struggles against the heaving mass of frenzied slaves around him. He is easily stronger than any of them, despite his size, and even several of them working in concert fail to pull him towards the edge. The urge to lash out and send them falling into the mire builds inside him, fueled by screaming faces and the utter senselessness that surrounds him. The choice to fight feels right, deep in the marrow of his bones, and he knows instinctively how best to imbalance, disable, and overcome every one of the other slaves. It would be so easy. But he fights it. Every time one of the slaves hits the water, it hurts him. He doesn't understand how or why. As more and more are killed, it merges into a lightning storm behind his eyes, amplified by the grasping, clawing hands and gnashing teeth tearing at his skin. He fights against the environment that has ensnared him, and not his fellow man, using only enough force to keep his footing without throwing those attacking him off. He fights not to kill, but only to survive. Of the 100 men and women who had been herded to the base of the ziggurat, only 12 remain. There is only the final step left above them, and it is only wide enough for a single person to stand on. The water is now a blurry pink sludge of decomposing humanity. The stink is indescribable, and more of the slaves fight with vomit stringing their teeth than without. A skull stares up at the boy from the surface as the flesh wrapping it melts away into a brownish-red slick. There is no longer any choice left for the child. He has reached the point where, against his will, he must end the lives around him to survive. The boy goes to great lengths to minimize the suffering he inflicts, nearly losing his own life time and again as he snaps necks and crushes skulls, so that the only things that splash into the sludge are corpses. The last of them, a big brute of a man, beats his fists bloody against the boy, until in his anger the child wrenches him down and the air fills with the sounds of agony. The man is only half submerged. His torso, head and arms remain above the surface of the acid, wildly clutching at the boy's legs. His strength evaporates, his eyes wide and unfocused with the inconceivable pain of everything below his waist boiling into nothing. Tears stream down the boy's face as he kicks the man back, the screams only stopping when he finally sinks beneath. The water stops at the edge of the last stair, just shy of spilling over onto it. Shaking, his body covered in scratches and pebbled by acid splashes, the boy looks up as the lone survivor, and the crowd roars. The maggot's eyes descend around him in a halo of buzzing silver orbs. Speaker grills built into their casings squeal and crackle to life.
"Behold, people of the Shire, for your coin and happiness we have a victor. We present this boy who has won the devil's tears. Which house has wagered their coin on his victory and thus has won them to their stable?"
One of the maggot's eyes clunks and chatters. Its voice scratches from the brass grill set into its face, soured by bitterness.
"It is House Thalkir."
"House Thalkir,"
the other eye grumbles.
"Of course. Well then, my child, what do you call yourself?"
A prod extends from the maggot's eye, sending an electric shock over the boy.
"Answer, whelp."
The boy stares back wide-eyed. The eyes float back from him a fraction.
"Nameless. How quaint. Wherever was this creature found, and from what people?"
"He was found alone, atop the summit of the northern mountains.
Ah, the perilous heights, whose cold winds and driven snow mask a volcano's fury. Charmingly apropos in this case. We name thee Angron, then. Child of the mountain in the old tongue. Behold, Angron Thalker, your newest combatant, and soon to join the games and spill blood upon the red sands for your amusement. But will it be the blood of his foes that is shed, or his very own? You will have to pay for the privilege to see, my friends.
His lips shaking, the boy somehow wills his tongue to shape words for the first time.
This is game.
The eyes swarm closer, orbiting him.
Ah, Angron speaks. Pay me, Durhan.
Perhaps not such a simpleton as we thought.
Speak again, little thing. Who will wager on what it says next?
The boy they named Angron lunges at the nearest maggot's eye, grabbing hold of it with both hands as the others scatter. The orb sputters as it pulls back, lifting him from his feet and dragging him to hang precariously over the toxic swill. A wave of curiosity washes over the crowd, every eye watching intently to see what will happen. Angron snarls, pulling himself up to try to force the robotic sphere down with his weight. Electricity surges out from the maggot's eye, locking Angron's limbs. His fingers release the drone, which twists just as he loses his grip, throwing him back atop the ziggurat. Applause is mixed with mutters of bitterness at being deprived of the sight of the boy's death, as the audience begins to file out of the arena.
Ah! This one has passion. Still some strength within you yet, eh?
It sends another wave of electricity through Angron's prone form. The drone hovers closer, until its chittering lenses are but a handspan from the boy's face.
That is very good, Angron Thalker. You will need all the strength in the world for what we have waiting for you.